Oh, love that music. March Madness, absolutely off the charts right now with the Big 12 Championship in Kansas City today, this afternoon at 5 o'clock. Kansas against West Virginia. Our coverage here on Sports Radio 810 WHB begins at 3:30 with the network pregame show and then tip off at 5 o'clock. My name is Brad Porter. We are broadcasting live from McFadden's in the Power and Light right across the street from Sprint Center. Please come down and say hello. We're having an absolute blast down here this week. Our show is brought to you by the Sports Medicine and Performance Center at the University of Kansas Hospital, the preferred healthcare provider of college basketball at Sprint Center. Learn more at sportsmedicine.kansashealthsystem.com. Also brought to you by the Brass Rail, McCarthy Chevrolet, KC Loft Central, and 360 Vodka. We got the Miller Lite Fan Fest going on down here. It's in an absolute blast. Jason Justice and Pamela and the good crew here at Union Broadcasting is setting up everything on the main stage. Plenty of giveaways and contests will be going on throughout the day today. Jed Marshall is producing our show back at the Rally House Studios, and Jed is going to pop in here, and we've got a couple of big news items to lead off the day before we get too deep into Kansas and West Virginia and the rest of college basketball going on. Oh, let me set the guest list before I go any further. Coming up at 2 o'clock, Tony Caridi, the voice of West Virginia, is going to join us. He's in town, and he is a great play-by-play guy. If you ever get a chance to spin around on satellite radio and listen to other schools' broadcast teams, of course, Kansas has a great team with Brian Haney and Greg Gurley, but Tony Caridi, one of the best in the business, and he's going to join us at 2 o'clock for an inside look at the Mountaineers and the boxing match they had last night with Texas Tech. At 2:30, Andy Sweeney from ESPN Louisville, host of the Midday Rush, is going to join us to talk about the SEC tournament, which is going on right now. Fisticuffs last night, almost. The Auburn coach got into it with the team trainer from the other team, the strength coach from the other team, and it looked like something might go down on the floor, but thankfully that did not happen. So we'll talk with Andy Sweeney about all the great events going on at the SEC tournament. And then at 3 o'clock, Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star, the beat writer who covers Kansas athletics, will join us and talk about KU and their game against K-State, and disappointing that Dean Wade didn't play at all, and Barry Brown was out after the first minute after getting hit in the eye, and I guess he was bleeding from the eye a little bit, or some internal bleeding. So that's certainly scary, but wish those two players could have been on there, because it was a good game until about the final maybe 6 minutes or so, and then KU kind of pulled away. So Jesse Newell at 3 o'clock. So a couple of news events to open the day, and Jed Marshall, you jump in whenever you want to. One, the Mike Moustakas signing is now official with the Kansas City Royals. $5.5 million with incentives that could take it up to $7.5 million. Mutual option between the two sides for next year at about $15 million. So that is done. And the other piece of news, which came out early this morning regarding Missouri basketball, and it's not good news, Jordan Barnett was pulled over last night at about 3:30 in the morning. He was weaving over a lane and was pulled over on suspicion of DUI. There's been no further announcement on that yet. He was released with his own signature and has to appear in court. And the ramifications may be that he doesn't get to suit up for Mizzou for the NCAA tournament. And for a squad that's already thin in terms of the roster and the bench, that would leave them with 8 players and only 7 scholarship players. Jed Marshall, for Mizzou, I'm not sure if the news gets – I mean, they've already lost players because of suspensions, dismissals from the program, transferring, and a season that has brought this program back to life. This is certainly a disappointing way to begin the weekend, Jed.
No, it is not. Dave Matter had a tweet that he sent out earlier. People were talking about what the suspension might be, and I'm trying to find it. It says, according to the Mizzou Student Athlete Handbook, an athlete arrested for driving under the influence will be suspended from team activities for a minimum of 1 week for a first offense. I'm not sure Jordan Barnett's background, but I'd assume this was his first arrest, so I guess that would mean that he will be out a week, which would mean that he would be out for their first-round tournament appearance.
Yeah, and I just read a tweet from our good friend Jarrett Sutton, the former Missouri basketball star who was on with us earlier this week. And Jarrett Sutton said, Jordan Barnett is a great kid from everything I've heard, as well as in brief interactions I've had with him. This just in, college kids make mistakes. Learning the hard way happens and is unfortunately a part of life. Every mistake teaches you something. It's a lesson. And taking away your time to be around your team and to play in the NCAA tournament is certainly a huge lesson. It's going to cost him, and it's going to cost his teammates.
Yeah, it is, unfortunately. And I echo Jarrett's sentiments. I mean, you don't want to have to learn things the hard way, but I hope that he, you know, is able to move forward. And it sucks for him if, you know, I mean, he's a senior. What a terrible way to go out. So my thoughts, at least, are with Jordan Barnett.
Yeah, and there's a chance, depending on where Missouri ends up, if they're on the 8-9 line, there's a chance that they could, even if they win their first game of the tournament, would face a high seed in the second game and might be out after the opening weekend. And if that's the case, Jordan Barnett might not get to play in the NCAA tournament. I mean, that's not the most important thing when you're talking about DUIs, but it is something that affects not only him, but his teammates and the coaching staff and the University of Missouri, and that is disappointing. As I mentioned off the top, the other big news, Mike Moustakas, his signing is official with the Kansas City Royals. Yeah, he just wrapped up his meeting with the media. Say that three times fast. Meeting with the media and with Dayton Moore and his agent Scott Boras there. And Scott Boras had some interesting comments. And I was looking at Rustin Dodd's Twitter feed just a moment ago, and I scanned past it, and let me grab it here real quick. Scott Boras said, of Mike Moustakas, the system failed Mike Moustakas. There should be more demand for an all-star with a World Series ring who has proven himself. That's what Scott Boras said about his client, Mike Moustakas. And I've gone back to this over
hilarious.
And over. Yeah, I know. This wasn't the Eric Hosmer news conference where Scott Boras sat there with a cat-like grin, and there's another term for that I can't say on the radio. I almost did. But he sat there with a big smile and a big grin, and San Diego is a hot lava talent, or hot talent lava, ready to flow. And he was all smiles and giggles then with Eric Hosmer. Today, almost a somber Scott Boras, like he was at a funeral. I mean, Mike Moustakas is a millionaire a couple of times over, all right? Let's not be having a pity party here. The situation is two things went against Mike Moustakas, or maybe three. One, his agent, Scott Boras, misread the market. They overplayed their hand. There are many reports out there that Boras and Mike Moustakas turned down 3 years and $45 million from the Angels, thinking they were going to get a better deal. They did not. The Angels signed another player and converted him to a third baseman, and the other markets for third baseman dried up quick. They all went with cheaper options, either by signing or through trade. So the agent, Scott Boras, and his staff misread the market, did not know what the market was going to be. Number two, Scott Boras did not understand that home runs aren't what they used to be. With the increased numbers, with the focus on launch angle and all that, more players are hitting more home runs. 38 home runs for Mike Moustakas. Hey, that's great. It's a Royals club record. It doesn't mean anything in Major League Baseball. Not like it used to be. It's on-base percentage. It's on-base plus slugging and other things that are factors now that Mike Moustakas does not have. So that's issue two. And issue three is the Players Association, or the union, did not understand that big market clubs would use the luxury tax as a de facto salary cap. And they would hammer the players on it. They would sign cheaper players and say, hey, we got to get under the luxury tax. The Yankees, the Dodgers, the Angels, the Tigers, White Sox, big market teams are saying, well, we don't want to go over the luxury tax. We can't sign that big deal. And the fourth thing, also going back to the Players Association, is that they agreed to the draft pick compensation for players who were given the one-year offer. The qualifying offer, Moustakas was given that, $17.9 million, right around in that ballpark. And so other teams don't want to give up that draft pick. The Players Association did not see that. And I will tell you this, I will share this with you. I'm not going to use a name, but down here at Power and Light yesterday, as I was walking out, I ran into someone that I would call, I don't want to use his name, but I'll say he was a significant player within the Players Association several years ago, someone who worked on the collective bargaining agreement that settled the work stoppage of 94 and 95. And he walked by and he said, hey, Brad. And I said, hey, again, not going to use his name. We talked for a minute and I said, I brought up your name the other day. And he said, why on earth would you do that? Why would my name come up in a conversation you were having? And I said, well, what happened in 94 and 95 would not have happened if you and your team at that time would have been in charge. And he kind of nodded, and we kind of ended the conversation briefly after that because he was on his way somewhere and I was on my way somewhere. But those are the things working against Mike Moustakas, and it was the perfect storm against Mike Moustakas. The free agent market for third baseman dried up. Misreading the market, the draft pick compensation, the luxury tax, big market clubs want to avoid. It all was stacked against Mike Moustakas. And, Jed, I'll bring you back in here. I mean, I'm happy the Royals got Mike Moustakas back. I hope he comes in with the attitude of, I need to be motivated and drive myself to get the next contract. I have a safety net. There's the option year for 2019 at $15 or $16 million. But I hope he comes out a motivated player. And if money's the motivation, I'm good with that, right?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Moustakas. And by the way, congratulations to he and his wife who just welcomed another child the other day.
That's right. I believe it is Michael Jr., I believe.
Ah, there you go. I didn't know if it was a boy or a girl. That's why I just said child. To me, Mike Moustakas, I think he has every right to be questioning whether Scott Boras should be his agent still.
And that is my most retweeted tweet to date, or maybe the second most. It's almost 200. I was up late the other night, and sometimes you should not tweet late at night. And I maybe thought about deleting it, and I did not. But
you can't delete the tweets. They go, you just got to let them ride.
It's out there. It's out there.
Someone will screenshot it if it's all that bad.
So my tweet was an email exchange. It says email to Boras, Scott, from Moustakas, Mike. Subject, WTF. And the body was, you're fired. Regards, Moose. And I think you got to be thinking about that if you're Mike Moustakas, because I don't know what Scott Boras is telling him. He can tell him that everything is unfair. He can tell him that the cards are stacked against him. He can tell him that teams are colluding, which some agents have suggested. But you got to prove that in a court of law, which the association did back, I believe, in the 80s and won a couple hundred million dollar settlement from the league. You have to prove that. That's tough. So Scott Boras can tell Mike Moustakas all of those things. At the end of the day, Mike Moustakas knows he's going back to his former club, which he dismissed at the beginning of the free agent period, for significantly less money than what he thought he was going to get, while his good friend and former teammate, Eric Hosmer, got $144 million from the Padres. So he's got to consider where to go in terms of who's going to represent him in the future.
And the problem with all of everything that Scott Boras is saying is that if you're Mike Moustakas, you say, well, yeah, that's great. You work for me. I pay you to know all of these things. I don't care whether all of these things happen. I pay you to figure out and have the foresight about what's going to happen in the market. That's why you're the best agent in baseball. That's what you told me.
And that's what you sold the family on. And I also tweeted at.
I was also reminded of a great point yesterday. I guess Sam Mellinger wrote in a piece the other day in the Star that Moustakas initially, when he was coming out in the draft, basically was told by Scott Boras to turn down the Royals' $4 million signing bonus offer and to go to USC. Against Boras's advice, he took his family's decision and took the $4 million, and the rest is history. So I'm almost wondering whether that having that come into play, as well as the fact that in this most recent negotiation, he essentially lost Mike Moustakas $11 million, why Mike Moustakas wouldn't be like, yeah, maybe I'm better off finding new representation.
Well, I know, and look, neither one of us are speaking for Mike Moustakas here. We're just kind of speculating on how we might handle the situation. So,
yeah. that we both, I think, would like to have, to be like, Brad, you didn't make $17 million, but I'm getting you $6 million.
Right. And here's the deal. You go back a couple of years ago when Alex Gordon was a free agent. He went out, tested the market, maybe didn't get the offers he thought he was going to get. Might have thought he was in the $90 to $100 million range. That didn't happen. He came back to the Royals for a ton of money. And Alex Gordon's agent is Casey Close. And he's one of the best in the business. You don't hear about Casey Close because he doesn't go to press conferences. He doesn't make sweeping proclamations. He stays in the background. He represents his player. He gets a good deal. End of story. If you want an agent, give me a call. My name is Casey Close. But you're not going to see him on SportsCenter. You're not going to see him on MLB Network. You're not going to see him using terms like hot talent lava, like Scott Boras. That's not going to happen. So maybe Mike Moustakas goes and has a conversation with Alex Gordon. What do you think of Casey Close? I like him. Got me a ton of money. Maybe give him a call. Maybe kick the tires on that a little bit. You know, Salvador Perez switched agents years ago. He signed that horrible deal after his first year in the big leagues when the Royals had him for peanuts before he exploded into being a star and fired his agent. And the Royals approached Salvador Perez and say, look, we gave you a bad deal. Let's improve the deal. They worked with his new agent to come up with a much better compensation package. So these things happen. Agents get hired and fired all the time in every sport. And I would, not going to predict anything, but Mike Moustakas might want to think about that before the next free agency period next year.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, if
that's what. Sorry, Jed. That's where I was waiting for you to jump in.
I'm sorry. I didn't want to step on you, and I ended up stepping on you. I guess I don't know. I was thinking about it just when you brought up Alex Gordon's agent. I know that Mike Moustakas doesn't necessarily love the media. I know Alex Gordon doesn't love the media for different reasons, in my opinion. But they're both kind of quiet, reserved guys. Maybe Moustakas has a little bit more red A in him, but that actually, I could see maybe him wanting maybe an agent who isn't quite as out in the spotlight and everything. I don't know. Just speculation on my part.
And I think it's fair to speculate considering, the events that unfolded in the offseason and getting a subpar deal. All right, so Mike Moustakas is officially signed, had his press conference today. Scott Boras did not look like he was all that happy and said the league did an injustice by Mike Moustakas, and that's what they're going to have to live with. They've misread that. So let's move into college basketball here because we've got a lot of stuff going today down here at McFadden's Power and Light right across the street from Sprint Center. We've got the Miller Lite Fan Fest. The folks at Union Broadcasting, Sports Radio 810 WHB, and ESPN Kansas City are setting up the stage. They're going to have all kinds of contests. They're going to be throwing things out. I heard Joshua Briscoe this morning, and Jed, I don't know if you know this, but he suffered an injury.
I did not hear that.
Maybe it's repetitive stress disorder. Said his arm was a little sore this morning, and he was thinking, what did I do? And he says he was launching cannonballs on the T-shirt toss because on the T-shirt toss on the main stage, it's not just throwing out a T-shirt. You tie it into a knot so it actually has some bulk to it, I guess you could say, and you can launch it further. And he said he was hitting the upper deck at Power and Light.
Wow, I had no idea that Josh was such the athlete.
Yeah.
I think he might still be in the building. I'll have to ask him about that.
Yeah, he says he's a little sore. And I did the T-shirt toss a couple of days ago, and the most embarrassing thing that happened to me was...
Did you pull an Alex Smith in the dodgeball game?
No, I did not pull an Alex Smith, but I close. I'm glad it's not on videotape. So there was a gentleman at the outdoor bar area next to the main stage, and he was waving, throw me a T-shirt. And I was like, okay. So he wasn't that far away, probably 20, 30 feet away. Tossed him a T-shirt, and he fumbled it, and it fell on the table and knocked over his friend's drink. And so he looked at me, and he was laughing because it was his fault, clearly. But my instinct was to immediately go to the other side of the stage so as to avert blame, as to avoid responsibility, which is a gift from my youth, avoiding responsibility. Mm-hmm. So that's what happened to me. But Josh, if you, I was listening to the show this morning, and if you saw it posted on his Twitter account, Josh was in front of the main stage. I think he was on the microphone, and there was a fan in front of the stage who was giving him the finger.
Ooh.
And Josh said not only was the guy giving me the finger, it was like a full 30 seconds. I mean, this guy was dedicated to making sure that Joshua Briscoe saw him giving him the finger. And I was laughing hysterically because I think Josh is one of the funniest people, and he's a gifted talent. But I was laughing hysterically at that. And Josh said, I acknowledge the guy. I said, way to go, bro.
Yeah.
I hope that doesn't happen to anybody else. But
just,
I mean,
holding
Josh
the
is a
bird
nice kid.
For 30 seconds? Wow.
Yes, for 30 solid seconds. Josh doesn't rate that kind of dislike.
And all due respect to Josh. Really, 30 seconds? Wow, baffled by that.
And that's dedication. If you're holding the beverage in one hand and giving somebody the finger on the other hand, that's dedication. I mean, he really wanted somebody to see him, and it was captured in the photograph, and it's now been tweeted and retweeted. So congratulations to the guy.
Yeah, if that was your whole goal, man, you accomplished something.
I hope that doesn't happen to anybody else.
Unfortunately, you're in the nice, safe McFadden's booth, so you should be fine. People can't see you. You can see them. It's nice and creepy.
I am sheltered for now. All right, college basketball. There are games underway. In fact, they've been going since early this morning. I got up and I was like, I don't know, it was 9 o'clock. Well, I was up at 6, but I started flipping around about 8:30, 9 o'clock. I'm like, there's no basketball game going on yet, is there? And sure enough, the America East Men's Championship Final was on. And if you're looking for that obscure team that's probably going to make a play-in game, or someone that you don't, a team that you don't know anything about, that you might, I'll take a risk on this team. UMBC, not UMKC, UMBC made a shot at the end to beat UVM 65-62.
I saw that earlier. The Catamounts, man. They normally dominate that league.
That's one of those teams, the Catamounts. You always look forward to that on Selection Sunday when Greg Gumbel says, and the 15 seed out of the America East, the Catamounts. And everybody goes crazy. What's a Catamount? And then what team is that? Oh, it's Vermont. And then are they any good? Well, they got knocked out, and UMBC is in. And if you don't, the only reason I know this is because they made the tournament a few years ago, and I had to look it up. I'm like, who's UMBC? It's University of Maryland, Baltimore County, which has a very The Wire sound to it.
Yeah, that was the first thing I was thinking. I'm looking it up right now. Yeah, it looks like, that looks like it might be in kind of a rough part of town. The mascot, though, the True Grit. How do you like that?
The True Grit?
Yeah.
That's the mascot?
That's what it says here.
I'll have to challenge Mick Schaefer on that, because Mick Schaefer, the sports director at 41 Action News, prides himself on knowing the name of virtually every mascot in college athletics. I mean, he's really good at it, too. But I don't know if he knows UMBC.
Well, if
what is it again?
The True, or not even the, just mascot. True Grit.
True Grit. And would they ever have, like, Clint Eastwood at courtside for the game with a name like True Grit?
Maybe. I don't know if you'd really want to go to these, you know, home games, at least. It's approximately 10 minutes from downtown Baltimore City, which many viewings of The Wire has taught me, not as great a place as you might think.
Well, I was, you know, when the Royals were going through the playoff runs, when they had the Orioles and the ALCS, Mick Schaefer and I drew the trip to Baltimore, and my boss at the time, won't say his name or anything like that, but my boss at the time was had a reputation for scheduling road trips and hotels and air flights at the last minute. So we always had overpriced flights in which you had to leave like at 5 in the morning or at midnight, and then you'd stay at I'm not picky when it comes to hotels. Honestly, when you're on the road and you're covering a major sporting event like the ALCS, you're in your hotel room to sleep, and that's it. Otherwise, you're going around the city. You know, when I was doing television, you'd go get scenic shots of the ballpark or monuments downtown or statues. And Baltimore is a great city around the ballpark to get video of those things. So Mick Schaefer and I got this hotel, and it was downtown, and I would say it was seedy. And I had taken a picture on my old cell phone. It didn't transfer to my new cell phone, but there were some splotches on the wall that to me indicated that a homicide had recently taken place in the hotel room. Well, can I put it that way? Is that delicate enough? I mean,
I don't know if that's delicate.
It was quite horrific. It looked like someone, you know, if you watch the CSI shows, they talk about blood spatter. It looked like a massive amount of blood spatter on the wall of my hotel room.
Wow. Well, we have a great show.
Talk. UMBC has already won. Other games in progress. We're going to talk about the SEC a little bit later in the show. And currently, Kentucky is manhandling Alabama 48-33. And Alabama had a great game last night. The Sexton kid went absolutely crazy. His passes are insane. Not only his ability to score, but his passes are insane. And then after the game, the trainer for Alabama, or the strength coordinator, I guess, had bumped into Bruce Pearl, and Bruce Pearl, and they had a stare down, so to speak, and after the game, Bruce Pearl said, well, the guy was in my way, and he wanted to obstruct my path, and I probably should have let it. I mean, come on. The strength guy? If there's one guy on the opposing, associated with the opposing team's program, you don't challenge. It's the strength person. I mean, if you're playing against Kansas in basketball, and you know who Andrea Hootie is, the strength coordinator, you don't mess with Andrea Hootie. You don't mess with strength people. Their job is not only to teach people how to work out, but they also work out themselves quite a bit. Don't do that. So, go ahead. Jed, you got one more thing? Yep.
According to Bob Nightingale on Twitter, this is 2 minutes ago, the guy who was big on the Eric Hosmer deal, this is at B Nightingale on Twitter, Mike Moustakas did not receive a single offer all winter until the Royals welcomed him back. That's from 11/23.
Okay, so what do we think of that? Because didn't Nightingale overestimate how much the Royals had offered Hosmer? Was he the guilty party in that?
He was the one who reported that they offered 7 years, 147, which we later came to find out was not true.
Was not true. So
with a grain of salt. But he is a national beat writer, and a national baseball writer, as I've mentioned many times. With the whole deal in the Eric Hosmer saga that went on, there can be people getting true information at that time that later comes out to be false. So I take Bob Nightingale's reputation with quite a bit of confidence.
Yes, I've been burned by sources before. One was bad. I got burned one time really bad, and the person was a good friend of mine. And I still see him around once in a while, not in baseball, in another sport. And after I got burned that one time, we had a long talk about it. And he said, well, you know, I couldn't confirm or deny what you asked. I said, well, I wasn't asking you to confirm or deny. Just, you know, tell me, is there accuracy to this report? And you said no. And that's where I got burned. And again, this was a completely separate story in another sport altogether. But, yeah, Bob Nightingale is a very talented reporter. But I find it hard to believe that there were no offers for Moustakas other than the Royals. I mean, we've seen the reported, and again, it's reported, so is it true, that Moustakas and Boris turned down 3 years and $45 million from the Angels? I have a hard time believing that there were no offers. I struggle with that. I mean, yes, the home run has become devalued in this day and age of Major League Baseball in the last couple of years because of the balls being juiced up even more, with the focus on launch angle and those sorts of things. I get that, but I find it hard to believe that no one outside the Royals offered Mike Moustakas any kind of a deal. And maybe that could turn out to be true, the draft pick compensation and those sorts of things. I just find that hard to believe. All right, I'm going to ask Jed over there. We're producing on the air here, Jed. Do we need to take a timeout here? Okay, sorry about this. It happens. It's live radio, and things happen. We are broadcasting live from McFadden's in the Power and Light right across the street from Sprint Center. Got the Miller Lite Fan Fest going on, which, by the way, is brought to you by Central States Beverage Company, Miller Lite, Boulevard Brewing Company, KC Live in the Power and Light District, State Farm, Rally House, KC Custom Electronics, Sport Court, Family Leisure, Digital Lagoon, Coca-Cola, and Big Brothers and Big Sisters. This is the Big 12 Tournament Special on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I am your host, Brad Porter. Jed Marshall is producing. We'll be back right after this with some more college basketball talk. The Big 12 Championship is today in Kansas City. Here's a band who's divisive in certain ways, Pearl Jam. By the way, it's the Big 12 Tournament Special, Sports Radio 810 WHB, broadcasting live from McFadden's studio right across the street from Sprint Center, where Kansas and West Virginia will play for the Big 12 Championship tonight at 5 o'clock. Pregame coverage begins at 3:30 here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jed, Pearl Jam is one of those bands that my brother, when he went to KU back in the 90s, Pearl Jam had just exploded when they played Day on the Hill in Lawrence. Out at, what's the
Clinton
lake?
Clinton Lake. I saw Everclear there.
Yeah, exactly. But Pearl Jam, I think 10, I think the album 10 had just exploded. And so my brother and some of his friends, frat brothers, were in charge of the trailer for Eddie Vedder and the other people. And they said at times after they had had a few, they could be real jerks, but mostly they were good guys. But it's one of those bands, Pearl Jam, that when they first exploded was like, here's this another grunge band out of Seattle. They're really good. They have a different spin on it. And then after, like, hit number 8, it was like, it became cool to say, oh, I'm not into Pearl Jam. I'm more Nirvana. I'm a realist. But Pearl Jam is a great all-time band.
I agree.
Do you agree?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Pearl Jam's one of my favorites. They've also matured a lot. Their sound's gotten a lot different. Anybody who can rock out on, I can't remember now. I'm blanking. The Neil Young song with Neil Young, Rockin' in the Free World. On stage with Neil Young. Yeah, you're a pretty damn good musician in my book.
And then during the Cubs playoff runs, there were videos that would pop up on Twitter that went viral of Eddie Vedder walking down the street just outside the stadium.
Yeah.
And there would be street musicians, and he would sit in. Well, like, the guy was playing drums on an upside-down bucket, and another guy had a guitar, and Eddie Vedder would be like, can I sit in with you? They didn't know who he was. He didn't put on airs like, I'm Eddie Vedder from Pearl Jam. He just said, can I sit down and play? And then people would figure out who he was and start videotaping it with their cell phone cameras. Thought it was fantastic.
Well, there's a really cool story written by Wright Thompson, formerly of the Kansas City Star.
Fantastic writer.
He's unbelievable. If you have about 30 minutes, it's about how long it'll take you, but it's about Theo Epstein, and it's after the Cubs win the World Series, and it talks about how Eddie Vedder was in the clubhouse partying with Theo Epstein because he's such a huge Cubs fan. I don't know why that came to mind, but... check out the piece by Wright Thompson. It's a good.
Well, and the latest one going around from Wright Thompson.
Oh, I haven't
and
seen
if you're
it.
If you're on Twitter, Wright Thompson is not
no,
on Twitter.
No, I've searched for him so many times. He's such a hermit.
Yeah, he refuses to go on Twitter. He's a very quiet person. I've met him several times when he was at the Star.
Oh yeah.
Could I call him the best writer in America? You could. There's an argument to be made for that. But he did a piece on Ichiro Suzuki.
Ooh.
And Wright Thompson went over to Japan, and honest to God, I was 20 minutes into the article, and I wasn't even halfway done.
That sounds about right.
The descriptive nature of Wright Thompson's writing is just terrific. So if you can find Wright Thompson's piece, ESPN.com, on Ichiro Suzuki, it is well worth the time. And when I have an hour and a half, I'm going to sit down and finish it.
I have a good story for you about Wright Thompson, but it'll have to wait for off air.
Okay, and I can guess where you're going because I've heard of the thing. But Wright's a great guy, and he's terrifically. I wish I had one million. He's just terrific.
Well, and it speaks to how lucky we are to have the Kansas City Stars, the entire newspaper, but the sports department in particular. We've been blessed with so many great writers who've been there currently and been there in the past. The Stars sports department. Unbelievably amazing.
The list of people, I was trying to write out a list the other day of the writers who worked in the sports department of the Star who have gone on. And I mean, you're talking about Wright Thompson, ESPN.com. You're talking about Jason King at Bleacher Report. And now Rustin Dodd has moved on to The Athletic, which is a terrific website, which I really want to subscribe to at some point. And on and on and on. And it's an amazing list of people. It is just incredible the talent they have turned out. All right, joining us here at the McFadden studio, Derek Hagelin. He's staring at me. I should have brought you in a little bit a minute ago, but it's the Big 12 Tournament Special. Derek Hagelin from ESPN Kansas City joins us here on WHB. And we were talking a little bit earlier about KU and their victory yesterday over K-State. And And Jed Marshall made me think of this the other day because when I do the weekend shows, I get accused of being a KU fan. You're a KU fan. And that word is I'm using that word incorrectly, I think, being accused of being a KU fan.
I think they make accusations about
well,
you because you host Jayhawk Game Day and you
– Right.
It's kind of your job on that show to talk positively about them.
Yeah, but if they stink out loud like they did against Baylor a few weeks ago, I put it out there.
Or Oklahoma State from a couple of weeks ago.
But Jed Marshall –
just last week.
Jed Marshall had tweeted out maybe the next day or day later you know, if being accused of being a KU fan is a bad thing, that's kind of silly. I'm a fan of everybody. KU, K-State, Mizzou, UMKC, if they ever make the tournament, I'm going to spend my savings to go watch him at the play-in game in Dayton. But the KU K-State game, this is what I was disappointed about. It was a good game until about the final 6 or 7 minutes. But Dean Wade couldn't play.
Right.
And Barry Brown got popped in the eye in the first minute, so he missed 39 minutes. And K-State was still hanging until those final 6, 7, 8 minutes. So I really wish I could have seen what K-State would have played like at full strength in that semifinal game.
Well, I do too. And Bill Self last night talked about it, and he even said, he goes, you know, we won, but we didn't play good at all. He goes, we all know we can play better.
Nope, they didn't, honestly.
He said it. He goes, you know, that was not a jubilant locker room. And you could kind of tell from the guys, too. It was, hey, we're glad that we got the win, but we did not play very well at all. And, you know, it was funny. You look over, and it was when KU was up by four. It was right before Marcus Garrett got the steal after he just airballed a three. Self is over there sitting on the bench, and he's got both feet propped up and his hands behind his head, and he takes a big deep breath because K-State was on a big run at that point as they cut it to two, and then Garrett just made a phenomenal play after he made a terrible play, missing the three, and then he goes, he gets the steal, puts it up, gets the steal, puts KU up by four, and then KU goes on a huge run to end the game. But you know, had Barry Brown been in there, I think it might have been a different scenario, because I was sitting next to Al Wallace last night from Fox 4, and there were a couple times where he said, he goes, if you would have said right now that this game would be where it is, mm-hmm. and you would have thought before the season started that this is the lineup that K-State was going to trot out there, how many of these guys would you said you would have heard of? And I'm like, Xavier Sneed's the only guy on the floor right now that I would say I would have heard of. And the bad thing for K-State was they try too much, and I don't know if it's just the fact that when they play Kansas, they try to do what they do, and that shoot threes. I said, Xavier Sneed has all the talent in the world in this conference to be a guy who averages 15 to 17 points a game, but he's a 28% three-point shooter, and he just thinks that he wants to sit out there and be Kevin Durant, and he's not good enough.
He whiffed on all five.
He's not a good enough three-point shooter, and then there were possessions where literally right after I had said that, he goes and drives to the basket. He doesn't make it, but he gets fouled, and he goes to the line. I go, that's what he needs to do. I don't know if that's something that Bruce Weber is not communicating to him, or if he's just not listening and thinks, you know, I'm a good three-point shooter. Well, the numbers say at 28%, you're not a good
three-point shooter. And neither is Barry Brown.
Right.
Barry Brown is not a good shooter.
No, none of those guys on that team. I think the best three-point shooter that they have on that team is Dean Wade, and it was unfortunate that he was out last night, because I think Kansas State honestly could have won that game without Dean Wade had Barry Brown not gotten hurt. And, you know, we're all there last night over on the sideline, not the sidelines, but in the media area watching the game, and we're sitting there, and we don't have the access to the television feed that other people do, so we're having to check social media. And, of course, we see Barry Brown go to the locker room, and then Dennis Dodd sees on the TV, because we're right behind, we're watching on the monitors behind where the guys calling the game are, and we see Barry Brown come back. We're like, okay, now maybe Barry Brown might be able to come back, and we just see him sitting over there with an ice pack.
Right.
And then you find out, basically, when the second half starts, that Barry Brown had slight bleeding in his right eye, and it's like, man, if that hadn't happened, who knows? And it wasn't an intentional play at all by Devontae Graham. You could tell Barry Brown tried to take a Euro step and brought the ball a little too high, and Graham went to try to get the steal and caught him in his eye. Like, yeah, that could happen with you and I playing at the local Y.
It was not Grayson Allen doing the butt shuffle.
No,
knocking
not
down.
At all. And I saw that last night. I'm just like, this.
Why?
Like,
why?
Why? Like, A, you're white. B, you play at Duke. You're already hated. Why give people more added motivation to not like you? Because last year you got suspended for tripping people.
Right.
And it's so blatantly obvious that he did that intentionally, and he tries to deny it.
Well, let's get to Kansas here. They've got the championship game tonight at 5 o'clock against West Virginia. If you're a Kansas Jayhawk, you better have your boxing gloves on, because that West Virginia-Texas Tech game was an absolute brutal affair. And I don't mean brutal like it was a bad game. I mean brutal like it was physical. I mean, it was a haymaker affair. But looking at Kansas, the player who has stepped up at times this year and at times has disappeared, that Kansas fans have been waiting to take over games, is now doing it. And I'm talking about Malik Newman. And we're talking about 52 points in the first two games combined, 30 in the opening day win, and then 22
yesterday
against K-State. And, again, he was 8 of 14 against K-State. His field goal percentage is off the charts. 5 of 8 from downtown. 6 rebounds. 4 assists. I mean, he's doing a little bit of everything. This is the Malik Newman that everybody has been waiting for. And Jesse Newell, who's going to be on later in the show from the Kansas City Star, wrote a great piece about, you know, 2 years ago, Malik Newman was sitting at a table in Mississippi saying, I'm going pro. I'm done with college ball. The NBA scout said, actually, no. You need some more seasoning. He transfers, sits out a year at KU, and now I think he's having a better year. He would probably need one more year of more consistency, but the way he's playing right now, he's going to be, let's see, the Big 12 doesn't have the most valuable player of the tournament. They have the most outstanding player. They have to be different.
And they have the first team. He's going to be first team.
Yes, first team, and he's probably, regardless of what, well, unless he fouls out in the opening minute, he's probably going to get the most outstanding player, right. Or Javon Carter could as well. But Malik Newman has been just at a different level in this tournament, and he credits Bill Self for telling him, dude, you need to step up.
Something that was interesting, too, last night, and Self said this outside the locker room scrum. He was asked, he goes, what word would you use to describe Malik Newman's season? And he goes, inconsistent. He goes, more good than bad, but inconsistent. And, you know, like you said, Malik Newman thought he was a guy who was going to go, and he even said it. He goes, I went to the scouting combine. I thought I was going to be a first-round pick. I thought I was going to the NBA, and they said, no, you need to go back. And that, I think, was a good thing for him. But something last night, too, that was said by Devontae Graham, who is the senior leader on this team, he was asked about Malik Newman, and he said, you know, hey, I just went up to him, and I finally said it. Hey, keep shooting. Keep doing what you're doing. That's why you're here. You know, I think a lot of people forget because he sat out that year, Malik Newman was a McDonald's All-American.
Right.
He was a five-star recruit that was going home and staying at Mississippi State. That was a huge get for Ben Howland when Ben Howland first got to Mississippi State. And I don't know if it's gotten talked about as much today in after the game. He, in my opinion, had the biggest shot of that game. I think Kansas was only up by a couple. LeGerald Vick got a steal off of K-State, and Vick tried to go up. And Vick, I will say, got away with a walk. So it was fortunate that that wasn't called.
It wasn't a Svee walk.
No, it wasn't a Svee walk. But LeGerald Vick tried to go up in the lane in between two or three people, and he didn't know what exactly to do. It was one of those, okay, oh, bleep, I'm here.
Oh, boy.
What do I do? And Malik Newman, credit to him, trailing, running up court in transition, stops right behind the three-point line. LeGerald Vick kicks it to him. It wasn't a great pass. Newman had to go down and grab it, picks it up, hits a three. I think it put KU up by 8 or 9, and from then on out it was, okay, this game is over. Kansas pretty much has it in the bag. That, to me, was the biggest shot of the game, not Marcus Garrett getting the steal and putting KU up by 4 with K-State having the opportunity to take the lead, but Malik Newman making that shot and hitting that clutch three to put KU up and make it a three-possession game was huge at that point in the game last night.
The other aspect of not only the game last night but the last two games for Kansas was not having Udoka Azubuike. Knew that going in. He got hurt the day before the tournament started. We're not sure when he's going to come back. It could
now,
be.
Self did say he worked out yesterday. He said they got a workout in, and they're hoping to get him on the court in the next 2 days. But he's not going to play tonight. He said that. He's not going to play tonight. But that's a good sign that Azubuike worked out yesterday.
Right. So all eyes are on Mitch Lightfoot and Silvio De Souza. And Mitch Lightfoot is a reliable player. And we forget he was Mr. Basketball in Arizona when he was in high school. And that's huge.
Four-star recruit, too.
Yes.
And no, four-star. Not
people
everybody remembers that.
You look at him, it's like, he's kind of tall, kind of athletic. No, he's very athletic. He spots a lot of shots. And he played his 21 minutes, 4 of 4. He doesn't miss shots. He takes them right around the rim. Only 3 rebounds, which was a little disappointing. But De Souza, more importantly, played 19 minutes, and his minutes have gone up significantly. Went 3 of 5, 11 rebounds, which was huge. 3 fouls in those 19 minutes, that's going to happen. The kid looks like the kid who's still growing into his body and doesn't understand how big he really is or how long his arms really are. But that's got to be a good sign going into the tournament, because even if you get Azubuike back, which we expect at some point, I think if you're Bill Self or if you're Silvio De Souza, you've earned just a little bit more trust from Bill Self, because what had happened before is De Souza would go in, play 4 minutes, foul 3 times, and turn it over twice.
Right.
So maybe he's earned a little bit more trust from Bill Self.
I think he has, and I've said to a couple people, a couple of the KU beat writers, I go, I like the growth that I have seen with him. And, you know, like I said last night, Al Wallace and I were talking. He goes, I can't – he leans over to me and he goes, I can't imagine being in high school in December.
Right.
And coming in and having to learn all this motion offense, the ball movement, you know, the weave, the high-low. He goes, I couldn't imagine having to do that and how hard that is for a kid like that. And DeSouza last night, you know, Lightfoot is a really good player. I think people really forget and don't realize how good he is at putbacks.
Yeah.
He's got such soft hands to be able to put the ball
back.
He is. He's sneaky athletic.
And he draws charges, too.
He does. But his ability to put the ball back around the rim is just unbelievable. And I don't think people really realize how good that is. But DeSouza last night was unbelievable. And Self said it after the game. He said, you know, he goes, I don't think Silvio realizes just how athletic he is and how athletic he can be.
He goes,
because you can tell when KU runs plays and whether it's Vic or Newman or Graham throwing up a ball, you expect to have a lob right there, and DeSouza's catching it and trying to go up and lay it in. And Self says, you know, when I got lobs back in my day, well, there wasn't very many of them. I made sure I threw it. And he goes, that's what we're trying to tell Silvio to do. And this is going to help them immensely, I think, come next week when they start in the NCAA tournament, because they're going to have three bigs that they're going to be able to play.
All right, we're coming up on a timeout here. Derek Haglund, thank you very much for jumping in the studio. We'll catch you again on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM and now 94.5 FM. Good stuff there. Coming up in just a few minutes, Tony Caridi, the voice of West Virginia sports, who is in Kansas City for this championship game, is going to join us to talk about the Mountaineers and the boxing match they had last night against Texas Tech. Looking at some SEC scores here, pardon me. At 2:30, Andy Sweeney from ESPN Louisville, co-host of the Midday Rush, is going to join us to talk about the SEC tournament. And then at 3 o'clock, Jesse Newell, the Kansas beat writer for the Kansas City Star, is going to join us with a final tune-up as we head into the pregame show, which starts at 3:30, and then tip off at 5 o'clock between Kansas and West Virginia. This is the Big 12 Tournament Special brought to you by the Sports Medicine and Performance Center at the University of Kansas Hospital, the preferred healthcare provider of college basketball at Sprint Center. Learn more at sportsmedicine.kansashealthsystem.com. My name is Brad Porter. You're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB. More after this when we come back from Power and Light in downtown Kansas City.
The Miller Lite Fan Fest, presented by Sports Radio 810, is brought to you by Miller Lite, State Farm, Sport Court, and Coca-Cola.
This gets me in the mood for just about anything. Beastie Boys, Pass the Mic, Check Your Head. I was joking with Jed Marshall earlier. I would say that I love this album, but I love all the Beastie Boys albums. I believe I have them all downloaded digitally. I have probably four or five CDs as well, if people still use those or know what those are.
I have all those CDs of the Beastie Boys.
Yeah, I have them. But it's hard to my car I have still has a CD player in it, so I could toss those in there.
Mine does too, actually. It's weird.
This is the Big 12 Tournament Special on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We are broadcasting live from McFadden's, right across the street from Sprint Center, where Kansas and West Virginia will play tonight for the Big 12 Tournament Championship. Tip off at 5 o'clock. Pre-game coverage begins here at 3:30. We're going to take it right up to that point with full coverage. Tony Caridi, the voice of West Virginia, will join us here in just a couple of minutes. At 2:30, Andy Sweeney from ESPN Louisville, co-host of the Midday Rush, will join us and talk about the SEC tournament. And then at 3 o'clock, Jesse Newell, the Kansas beat writer for the Kansas City Star, will join us and talk about the SEC tournament, which I have on the TV in front of me at McFadden's. Kentucky with a big lead right now over Alabama, and Kentucky is going to be moving on to the next round, and they just wiped the score away. There it is, 74-58 with about 2.5 minutes to go. So this game has not been close for most of it. So with just a little bit of time left, I want to invite everybody down here to Power and Light District to the Miller Lite Fan Fest, and please hang around by the main stage All the good people from Sports Radio 810, WHB, and Union Broadcasting will be there. There'll be contests. I'm sure they'll be doing free throws again. They had a push-up contest the other day. They'll be doing three-pointers. They had the Italian sausage contest, eating contest the other day. So all kinds of good stuff and great prizes, T-shirts and hats and koozies and inflatable basketballs and just about everything you can print a logo on, they have. And they'll be giving that stuff away and throwing it out to the crowd and getting everybody ready for Kansas and West Virginia. And I'm having a good time here at McFadden, so please come down and join us. About 30 seconds left, so one more time. Coming up next, Tony Caridi, voice of West Virginia basketball, is going to join us. We'll talk about those Mountaineers and the boxing match they had against Texas Tech last night and what we can expect in the championship game against KU. My name is Brad Porter. You're listening to the Big 12 Tournament Special on Sports Radio 810 WHB. More from Power and Light right after this quick timeouts.
I'm bought for the price of a flagon of rice. The wind busts the cabin. You speak on the light. Oh, willingly, locusts and lips.